people around you. And with your changing environment. You want certain things from other people. The way to go about getting those things reveals your personality. Your personality is the way you affect other people. Think about that. The way you affect other people.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K220 HR in Hood River at 91.9 FM, and K282BH in Philomath Corvallis at 104.3 FM, and on the web at KBOO.FM. The time is 10 a.m. It's time for American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler.
This is Jacqueline Keeler, your host, and today's episode of American Standoff is coming on a very sad moment for the Black, for all of us, but particularly for the Black community in across the country, and in particularly in Buffalo, New York. And I'd like to welcome you to today's American Standoff. We're a fairly new cable show, as I always say. And we began on January 6, 2021, actually 2022, a year after the Capitol insurrection. And the show examines the current political divide in America. And it's from an Indigenous perspective, given by myself, Jacqueline Keeler. I'm a Native journalist based here in Oregon. And, you know, I always begin by saying, you know, just recalling what happened a year ago. When thousands of supporters, or a year ago, January 6th, when thousands of supporters of President Trump gathered in D.C. and then stormed the Capitol, claiming that the election had been stolen from Trump, the big lie, which we've done an episode on, and alleging that, you know, Trump is still president. And then, of course, the same thing had happened in our own Capitol just a few weeks earlier, when our state capitol was breached by armed insurrectionists defying COVID restrictions. So, as I mentioned, today on American Standoff, we're discussing the tragedy that happened in Buffalo, and particularly in the, you know, the causes of it, domestic terrorism and the racist great replacement theory, which are driving this. And it's absolutely astounding that I can't even, this was a tough show to put together, I have to be honest with you. It's just not where, you know, I know things are bad in this country. I mean, this is what we discuss every week. And I know the show is probably tough to listen to as well. And my husband was saying I should probably do something a little different, but you know, we examine on the show these connections between these disparate events, like, you know, mass shootings. We're dealing with a lot of violence in this country coming from white men, and the origins of this in white supremacy and the DNA of colonialism and the ongoing occupation of, for my context as an a Native woman, of our homelands, of our Native nations, which are under occupation by the United States. And once again, my name is Jacqueline Keeler, and I'm your host. This is a call-in show, so please do feel free to call in at 503-231-8187. So, as I mentioned, today on American Standoff, you know, we are a divided country, and for many of us, we are a country in mourning over the loss of 10 innocent Americans in Buffalo, New York, who were murdered by a racist white man on May 14, 2022. The terrorist chose the grocery store because he did not want Black Americans to feel safe anywhere. Sorry, this is tough. I mean, this latest tragedy has been linked to the spurious right, racist, far-right great replacement theory. I should say that my mother-in-law grew up in Buffalo, New York, and was subjected to a lot of racism there as a Native student, and it's marked her entire life. On this episode of American Standoff, we'll discuss how the history of white supremacy has fed into the reemergence of such noxious and murderous false online screens. Sorry. We're opening with an interview on The Takeaway with Reverend Jackie Lewis of the Middle Collegiate Church in New York. Sorry.
On Sunday, I was so upset. I was so upset trying to comfort my people. And what I came to realize as I was rewriting that sermon Sunday morning, if I don't have hope, I'm going to curl up in a ball and die. I cannot bear the possibility that this is all there is. And I think that's what faith is ultimately. Melissa, I'm a professional faith chick, right? Ultimately, faith is absolutely the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things unseen. And you know, because our people did this, walked out of slavery and went back to get some more people, worked on voting rights despite their heads being crashed in on bridges, sat at lunch counters to desegregate despite the violence that they suffered, got up when their young people died, shot, killed, and kept moving, survived the assassination of their kids at the hand of so-called fake police. Melissa, I have hope because a great cloud of witnesses has shown us that death does not have the last word. And good people of moral courage find their way to each other and do amazing things, friend. Amazing things.
So that was the Reverend Jackie Lewis of the Middle Collegiate Church in New York being interviewed on The Takeaway, about the shooting and terrorist murder of Black Americans in Buffalo, New York. 10 were murdered, and 3 have been injured. And sorry, I had to recover myself there. Good morning. This is American Standoff. It's a live talk radio show, so please do call in if you want to be part of this conversation. You know, this is sort of a show of mourning. So, This killer was born in the 21st century. It's astounding to me that we through everything that's happened with the civil rights movement, and that this is where we are, you know, more than 50 years later. I think that as Americans, we have to begin to really deal with this and to confront it, and because it's not going away. It's not existing in the little corners of the internet. It's here. It's in our lives, and certainly Black Americans are bearing the brunt and this, and we've also seen shootings of other mass shootings of other targeted Americans, including Asian Americans and Jewish Americans and Hispanic Americans. So good morning. This is American Standoff. This is a live talk radio show, so please do call in. The number here is 503-231-817. I always begin by introducing myself in my language. My name is Jacqueline Keeler, and in the Navajo way, we also introduce ourselves to our clans. My clan is Kia'ani Nishle. I'm Towering House, and I'm a citizen of the Navajo Nation, also known as the Diné people, or the Diné Ta, or the Diné Pekeya. Through my mother, and I am Yankton Sioux, which in our own language we say Ihantuan Dakota, through my father. My father is a citizen of that nation. And I'd also like to acknowledge that what we now call Portland, Oregon, exists on the ancestral lands, and I would say signifies an occupation and of their land, of the Multnomah, Wasco, Calumet, Clackamas, Cowlitz, bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Kayapuya, Mulala, and many other tribes. And this question doesn't seem sufficient at this moment, but I do ask this in every episode of American Standoff, is that in the more than a year that has passed since January 6, 2021, when we saw white extremists, insurrectionists, storm the Capitol in support of President Trump, what have we learned? This week, we are a country, as I mentioned, a divided country, but a country in mourning for the racist and violent murder of 10 Americans in Buffalo, New York, who were targeted for killing just because they are Black. The suspect allegedly wrote a 180-page document filled with hateful rants about race and ties to the Great Replacement. You may ask, what is this conspiracy theory, the Great Replacement? In short, it's a conspiracy theory that states that non-white individuals are being brought into the United States and other Western countries to replace white voters to achieve a political agenda. It is often touted by anti-immigration groups, white supremacists, and others, according to the National Immigration Forum. White supremacists argue that the influx of immigrants, people of color more specifically, will lead to the extinction of the white race. Peyton Gendron, the 18-year-old white man accused of killing 10 people and wounding another 3 in Buffalo, allegedly said his greed that the decrease in white birth rates equates to a genocide. The alleged supermarket shooter and other extremists claim the U.S. has to close its borders to immigrants. The Great Replacement theory is sometimes seen in other ways, such as claims of voter replacement, immigrants invading America. The National Immigration Forum said the first claim assumes that immigrants and non-white people will vote a certain way, ultimately drowning out the votes of white Americans. Adolphus Felt Jr., professor of political science and African American studies at Winthrop University, said white nationalist movements arise when people of color are seen as a threat to the political and economic realms. Felk says white nationalists are worried that, quote, whites will no longer be a majority of the general population, but a plurality, and see that it's a threat to their own well-being and the well-being of the nation. So, as many of you may have seen, on Wednesday, Biden traveled to Buffalo. He joined and met with the relatives of those killed by the gunman, and this terrorist allegedly drove 200 miles to massacre them, while wallowing in a self describes to you of self-radicalization, racism, and fascism. I found, personally, I found Biden's remarks striking because it was the first time I'd seen the term white supremacy used by a major political figure in our country, you know, a mainstream figure. And when I first really began to use that term actively, I did get pushback, and because people were like, how can we, it just seems so sort of just too much of a blanket statement to say about what's going on in this country today. But I think we see now today that that is exactly what's going on in this country today. And this is the greatest threat to many, to the stability of our country and to the safety of millions of Americans across the country. President Biden drew a line between racist massacres of Black, Hispanic, and Jewish Americans in Charleston, South Carolina, El Paso, Texas, and Pittsburgh to spell out what is now obvious. The United States faces a significant scourge of white supremacist extremism that erupts constantly and results in mass racially motivated murders of innocent people. This bile is being exacerbated by online propaganda and conspiracies that white Americans could be replaced by a tide of immigration. Such claims are often legitimized on conservative media and have been hinted at by some GOP politicians. What happened here, Biden said, is simple and straightforward. Terrorism, terrorism, domestic terrorism, violence inflicted in the service of hate, and the vicious thirst for power that defines one group of people being inherently inferior to any other group. Biden said an emotional speech laced with grief and anger. Let's listen to a portion of that address by President Biden in Buffalo.
On all Americans to reject the lie. And I condemn those who spread the lie for power, political gain, and for profit. White supremacy is a poison. It's a poison running through our, it really is. Running through our body politic. And it's been allowed to fester and grow right in front of our eyes. No more. I mean, no more. We need to say as clearly and force as we can that the ideology of white supremacy has no place in America. None. And look, failure for us to not say that, failure in saying that is going to be complicity. Silence is complicity.
So that was President Biden and his remarks. Please do call in if you'd like to respond to that. Sorry, I got disconnected for a moment. And, you know, the number here is 503-231-8187. And silence is complicity. That is a very strong words, and I hope that people won't be silent anymore. And I think this is a call to all Americans to speak out against this kind of hate. And we can no longer simply think it's just something that's out there in the ether, and it's here now. And I'd like to listen, you know, to bring in, you know, to play some audio from activist Brittany Packnett Cunningham. She's the co-founder of Campaign Zero, and she was a member of President Barack Obama's task force on 21st century policing. Let's listen to her interview on MSNBC as she gives an overview of how this targeted act of murder and violence has hurt the Black community of Buffalo.
Just a minute, I'm trying to find it.
As our engineer is looking for it, Ty's looking for it, Brittany is going to be talking about another aspect of it in which he targeted a grocery store because he knew that that's where he wanted to make sure that Black Americans did not feel safe even while they were shopping in the grocery store. It was a really an incredibly specific and vile act of terrorism to prevent people from being safe in moments when they really just doing their regular tasks about life.
I got it.
Okay.
All day you have been paying homage to the victims, talking about their lives. Tell me what you are making as you watch this all unfold.
Well, like you said, Alicia, I am thinking of the families of Andre McNeil, Haywood Patterson, Celestine Chaney, Roberta Drury, Pearly Young, Aaron Salter Jr., Ruth Whitfield, Kat Massey, and the other folks who have been affected by this, the entire community. I've been listening very closely to the voices of those who are from Buffalo and who live in Buffalo, especially in this community. As you said, it is a historically Black community. And this grocery store, Tops, was a center for that community. The community actually fought for decades to get this store, which is the only grocery store, the only full grocery store in a community that was otherwise affected by food apartheid. They finally organized and got this grocery store opened in 2003. This is not only where people bought food for their families, it's where they paid bills. It's where they got food stamps and received SNAP benefits. It's where people were able to access because it was on a bus line, and it was where people knew your name. People often talked about Aaron Salter Jr. greeting them, the security guard greeting them and making jokes with them about the rickety shopping carts as they walked in. These are the memories that people are carrying with them through what could have been prevented. And I want to be very clear about this. White supremacy is a systems project. It is very tempting to individualize this. It is very tempting to call this simply a tragedy. We're already seeing these mental illness narratives all over the place. But in truth, radicalization requires books and copycat manifestos, tech platforms, meeting places, political parties, media, and content to develop the kind of people who would go and commit this kind of horror. The system was successful and an entire community is suffering for it. And we need to wrap our arms around that community as we challenge our lawmakers and our leaders to shift the system that continues to create these outcomes.
So that was Nikki McCann Ramirez. That was Brittany Packnett Cunningham. She's the co-founder of Campaign Zero. And she was a member of President Barack Obama's task force on 21st century policing. And that's her being interviewed on MSNBC discussing the terrorist act in Buffalo. And you probably heard about how Fox News host Tucker Carlson has propagated the racist and anti-Semitic great replacement theory cited by the mass shooter in Buffalo, New York. And now, coward that he is, he's claiming amnesia despite plenty of video of him pushing the theory conspiracy, which he mentioned more than 400 times on his show. Let's listen to Nikki McCann Ramirez and for Media Matters being interviewed on Democracy Now with Amy Goodman and examining the role of Fox News in mainstreaming this once fringe conspiracy theory.
I want to look at the role of Fox News in pushing the great replacement conspiracy theory in opposition to gun control, particularly through Fox's most popular host, Tucker Carlson. A New York Times investigation last month found he invoked the conspiracy that Democrats are trying to force demographic change through immigration in more than 400 episodes of his show on Fox News. I want to also bring in another guest to join Professor Kendi. Nikki McCann has spent years compiling evidence for the Watch watchdog group Media Matters of how Tucker Carlson has used his show to launder white nationalist ideology. Nikki McCann Ramirez is going to join us in a second, but first, just a few examples she found of Tucker Carlson repeatedly defending the white supremacist great replacement conspiracy theory. This is Carlson lashing out last April at President Biden's immigration policy.
An unrelenting stream of immigration. But why? Well, Joe Biden just said it, to change the racial mix of the country. That's the reason, to reduce the political power of people whose ancestors lived here and dramatically increase the proportion of Americans newly arrived from the third world. And then Biden went further. He said that non-white DNA is the, quote, source of our strength. Imagine saying that. This is the language of eugenics. It's horrifying. But there's a reason Biden said it. In political terms, this policy is called the Great Replacement, the replacement of legacy Americans with more obedient people from faraway countries.
And that's Tucker Carlson on Fox News last April. This is another clip noted by Media Matters from last year as Carlson's fear-mongering about white replacement genocide and a race war.
The left and all the little gatekeepers on Twitter become literally hysterical if you use the term replacement, if you suggest that the Democratic Party is trying to replace the current electorate, the voters now casting ballots, with new people, more obedient voters from the third world. But they become hysterical because that's what's happening, actually. Let's just say it, that's true.
Nikki, thanks so much for being with us. As we talk about what motivated this 18-year-old white supremacist, talk about the great replacement theory, where it came from, and what Tucker Carlson is doing with it, and how it's being weaponized by everyone from the New York Congress member, Elise Stefanik, to the senator from Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, Congressman Perry, and more.
The Great Replacement conspiracy theory has existed for decades. It is a subset of a larger conspiracy known as the white replacement or white genocide conspiracy theory. And it really came into a renewed era of prominence in the last decade with a period of acceleration in the last 3 to 4 years. In 2012, a French writer published a book called Le Grand Replacement. And what it essentially argues is that there is a cabal comprised typically of elites, Jewish people, because this is fundamentally an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, and media figures who are using immigration, birth rates, and multiculturalism to eliminate or replace the white race. This theory baselessly makes these accusations of what are essentially natural or cyclical changes in demographics. And what it does is create a dynamic where believers view immigrants and non-white people as an existential threat, not only to themselves physically, but to their position in society. And importantly, this theory wants believers to act against their supposed replacement. So when people like Tucker Carlson present a ready-for-cable version of the theory, it makes more extreme versions of it more accessible to audiences who would have never encountered it or would have never really thought about it. And if people believe in portions of the theory, like the idea that immigrants are being, quote unquote, imported to replace them demographically, it becomes easier to tack on more extreme versions of the theory and fold them into their beliefs.
Can you talk about how Fox News has been covering this massacre?
Absolutely. So a notable thing that we've seen pretty much since the coverage broke is that Fox has been very hesitant to make any reference to the Great Replacement theory or talk about specifics about what was in the shooter's manifesto. And to be clear, the shooter's manifesto did not directly reference Tucker, but Fox News is aware that they have been pushing this theory, selling it toward their audience. And they do not want to make that connection themselves, to explicitly connect that theory to their audience once again. I believe what we're seeing Fox News do right now is kind of fold back and fall back onto traditional reactions that they have to mass shootings, that this will be used in an attempt to promote promote more gun restrictions. Or as we saw yesterday, one of their hosts on a Sunday show said that this shooting will be exploited to unfairly censor conservatives. I think Fox News is very aware of the hand that they've had in bringing this conspiracy to mainstream audiences, An Associated Press poll recently found that 1 in 3 Americans now believe that immigration is being used as a form of electoral manipulation, electoral replacement. And they're very aware that they have a hand in this narrative. So they are being very cautious about how they cover this and are really trying to deflect the narrative onto other issues that don't necessarily implicate them.
Do we know where the 18-year-old shooter, alleged shooter, Peyton Gendron, learned about these theories? I mean, it's a vast screed that he's got, what, something like 180 pages, where he lived online, etc.
Yes. So the shooter did publish a more than 100-page manifesto. And I want to make a caveat here. As we already know, the manifesto was largely plagiarized from writings of other shooters, writings that he found online. So we should always take these like self-published screeds with a bit of a grain of salt. What the shooter claims is that he was radicalized on 4chan and other online forums, that he didn't really have a lot of direct contact with cable news. But what extremism researchers know is that Tucker Carlson's rhetoric is very present on these forums. A lot of people on these forums view Tucker Carlson as an ally in presenting their messaging to a layman's audience. So it's not unlikely that this shooter encountered Tucker Carlson, his rhetoric, his statements about immigration, people of color. It wouldn't be unlikely that he encountered them online. And it's important to point out here, once again, that presenting a sort of stripped down version of this theory, which is what Tucker Carlson does. He doesn't explicitly make references to racial superiority or explicitly make this references to anti-Semitism when he talks about the Great Replacement. But what he does do is give viewers context clues that allow them to make those connections themselves. He regularly attacks Jewish billionaire George Soros as an enemy of Western civilization who's attempting to destroy America. He uses very racialized language when discussing the theory. And what that does is make it easier for his audience to find these more extremist spaces, to make those connections, and directs them toward a place where when a shooting like this happens, and you have a third of the population that already believes that a large portion or a central tenet of this theory is true, it's a lot harder for people to disavow it or to say, that theory is incorrect, I shouldn't subscribe to it. They can say, oh, well, this was a quote-unquote lone wolf attack, or this man was crazy and acting on his own. But the underlying beliefs can still be considered true. And that is a very dangerous thing for the most watched cable news host to be doing.
I mean, you can't help think about what happened here, what happened at the church in South Carolina, what happened in El Paso in 2019. The shooter deliberately went to a place with a large Latino population, clientele, customers, the local Walmart. He also issued a screed railing against a Hispanic invasion and posted that online. This was in 2019.
Okay, that was, we were just listening to Democracy Now! Some of you may have heard that that episode here on KBOO, and talking about the great conspiracy theory and the role of Tucker Carlson in promoting it. And that was Nikki McCann-Ramirez from Media Matters, being interviewed by Amy Goodman. And once again, this is Jacqueline Keeler, and this is American Standoff. And I'd like to encourage you to call in to the studio if you want to be part of this conversation, 503-231-8187. And just sort of, what do you think of what has happened? And how can we change it? We were all raised with this dream of an America that could be inclusive, could be get past its history of racism. So we played the clip of Biden's response to this. In that interview, she mentioned a survey that came out last week from the Associated Press in ORC, Center for Public Affairs Research, which found that 1 in 3 Americans believe an effort is underway to replace U.S.-born Americans with immigrants for electoral gain. 1 in 3, that's a very high percentage of Republicans who believe this. When Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell was asked 3 times on Tuesday in different ways about replacement theory, if leaders have to speak out about it or believe it themselves, and he declined to fully respond. He did say that racism is of any sort is abhorrent in America and ought to be stood up to everybody, both Republicans, Democrats, and all Americans. Let's listen to an MSNBC panel of experts responding to Biden's words. When he named white supremacy as a threat to America today.
I want to bring in Rashawn Ray, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and professor of sociology at the University of Maryland College Park. Also with us, CNN chief political analyst Gloria Borger and Daryl Johnson, former senior domestic terrorism analyst at the Department of Homeland Security. Thank you all for being part of this important discussion. Rashawn, first, I just want to get your thoughts on the president's visit today and his message today. We had heard from activists and family members prior to that speech, and they wanted President Biden to do more than just be empathetic. They wanted him to call out this crime for what it is. It's about hate, it's about race, it's about right-wing ideology. Did he meet this moment?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that Biden has been trying to do, and as you noted, this is one of the reasons why he ran. People want to get past sound bites. They actually want to see policy change to hold people accountable. As you noted, make no mistake, this was about white supremacy ideology. This was about individuals going into a black neighborhood. Black neighborhoods have always been targeted by hate, and went into this neighborhood and killed 10 people. People want to see Biden actually pass the policies that put him in office. A lot of people came out in Georgia, Michigan, across the country to put him in office. Not only have we not seen advances as it relates to hate crimes, but voting, policing, reparations are not even on the table. People want to see more, and they haven't gotten that.
So, Gloria, politically, do you think this horrific attack and the words we heard from the president today change anything?
Not immediately. I don't think it does. The Democratic leaders of the Senate have been working with some Republicans to try and close loopholes, background checks. Joe Biden himself was the person, you'll recall, who passed the assault weapons ban, which has expired. And I think right now, as you're heading into this election, it isn't going to change anything politically, except that perhaps more Democrats will start talking about this and will start openly saying replacement theory is racist. And this, I think, is what Biden was saying today. He was saying, look, silence is complicity. Right. And so if more and more people get put on the record about this, get asked questions about this, what do you believe in replacement theory? What do you think of it? Do you believe that it's racist? Do you believe that people are coming across the border to replace white people and take over the country, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, let's have a debate on what people really believe about replacement theory. Maybe that will happen. Maybe that will happen. But honestly, I have to say, after years of covering efforts to get some kind of gun control in this country, I would have to say that I'm not optimistic. You get a little piece of this and a little piece of that.
But maybe it's not just about gun control. I mean,
that's
maybe
right.
It's bigger picture. I mean, he's talking about white supremacy, about domestic terrorism. And so, Daryl, President Biden, he used that word, terrorism, today. His Secretary of Homeland Security, however, says, you know, that's a legal term. Laws are a little bit, you know, I guess a gray area right now when it comes to domestic terrorism and how you go about prosecuting that. So he wouldn't call it that. I wonder, is it important to use that language, especially given that the Department of Homeland Security says domestic terrorism is the greatest terror threat to this country at this moment?
Yes, yeah, so I applaud the president for using that word because it is applicable to this case. And an organization I belong to, We Are Many United Against Hate, issued a call to action yesterday. And one of the things that we've asked is for both Republicans and Democrats to come out and condemn these types of attacks and categorize them as acts of terrorism. I mean, the media has us accustomed to equating terrorism from only the Middle East, but we do have homegrown terrorism here in the United States carried out by white people. So it's important to use that term, because acknowledging the threat is the very first step in trying to combat it.
Rashawn, you expressed some frustration about the lack of action taken so far, or what this president has been able to accomplish when it comes to issues of racial injustice and dealing with hatred that exists in the population and society at large. President Biden ran as a great unifier. He called the race a battle for the soul of this nation. Where are we in the battle?
Well, look, I think we are in the thick of the battle. What we just heard is important for people. Some statistics need to be laid out. 3 out of 4 of the domestic terrorist acts that happen in the United States come from right-wing extremists, primarily white nationalists. 60% of hate crimes have to do with race. We are in this battle for the soul of the nation. And as my grandfather would always say, who served 21 years in the Army, Purple Heart, Bronze Star as a drill sergeant, our silence is our acceptance. Biden noted that. But what people, again, want to get past are narratives. Part of what needs to happen is what is happening in the state of Maryland, which is the Lieutenant Richard W. Collins III law, which actually expands the scope by which prosecutors can pursue individuals for hate crimes. It says that race and other protected clauses simply have to be one of the reasons why people engage in behavior. The other thing that academics have noted is that maybe we need to start thinking about these hate groups as gangs. That will give law enforcement more of the ability to pursue them in different ways and investigate them in different ways. But it's very clear that we are in a moment in time where people are getting attacked in school for speaking the truth, that people are getting attacked for going to get eggs and breads from the grocery store, and more needs to be done from the White House to our dinner tables to prevent these sort of things from happening. And this is why in Dallas, just recently, a 9-year-old little boy who was white went to his neighbor's home and pulled out a whip and whipped the door with it. It was something out of 1922 or 1822 or maybe even 1955 when Emmett Till was killed. And then the father shot at the father, the black father of the little girl. We have to realize that people who go into the grocery store in Buffalo come from parents like that who start off as little kids like what we saw in Dallas.
And so how does that become normalized or seen as acceptable in society? We have seen some Republicans, Gloria, like Liz Cheney, call out members of her own party saying they have a role in all of this and is urging a course correction for those members of the party. Do you think that will happen?
No, I don't think that'll happen right away at all. But I think what we see happening, and this is not just Republicans, what you see happening is we used to talk about lone wolf, and we used to console ourselves by saying, oh, this person is just crazy. This person is a lone wolf. He acted alone in killing 10 people, et cetera. There are no more lone wolves. That's not what it is. They are seeing things. They are reading things. They are so-called educating themselves on the internet. And they are becoming a part of a pack. And this is what we are seeing now. And this is why the head of the FBI has said this kind of domestic terrorism is what we really have to fear in this country right now. And we all have to kind of try and wrap our heads around that this is the greatest fear that we should be thinking about as American citizens, that it comes from within and not from outside.
Okay, so that was an MSNBC panel of experts responding to Biden's strong words and his naming of white supremacy as a domestic threat, terrorism threat, which is a legal term in America today. And once again, thank you for listening. Please do call in to the studio if you want to be part of this conversation. The number here is 503-231-8187. And this is Jacqueline Keeler, your host. You heard when the panelists, Rashawn, talked about Lieutenant Richard Collins III law. And he was murdered. He was a black man. He was 23 years old. He was days away from graduating from Bowie State University, and he was visiting friends on the University of Maryland campus when he was knifed to death by a white man. And he was, the murderer, Sean Urbanski, was found to be a member of a white supremacist Facebook group, Alt-Reich Nation, and he was convicted of first-degree murder. Of course, it doesn't bring Mr. Lieutenant Richard Collins III back from his family. So this law has been put in place in Maryland to address hate crimes like this. And time is going by quickly. I have another audio that I wanted to play. And also, Liz Cheney, Representative Liz Cheney, was mentioned as someone who has spoken about holding her party accountable. She blamed her own party on Monday for enabling white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism. And she tweeted that GOP leaders must renounce and reject these views and those who hold them. Of course, she has been ousted from House Republican leadership for her outspoken criticism of Trump. Once again, thank you for listening. Please do call in. The number is 503-231-8187. And I have another audio here from Democracy Now! Amy Goodman talking to Ibram X. Kendi. And I highly recommend his books as well. She'll list some of them in the interview.
Joined by Ibram X. Kendi, the Andrew W. Mellon Professor in the Humanities at Boston University, founding director of the Boston University Center for Anti-Racist Research, contributing writer at The Atlantic, where his new piece published, well, it looks like it was published yesterday, but it was actually published last month before the attack in Buffalo, headlined, "The Danger More Republicans Should Be Talking About: White Supremacist Ideology is Harmful to All, Especially the Naive and Defenseless Minds of Youth." He's also the author of many books, including Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America, which won the National Book Award for Nonfiction. But as you watch this horror unfold this weekend, I think it's very critical to talk about taking the word fringe out of fringe theory, the great replacement theory, because how mainstream what is motivating quite explicitly this young self-identified white supremacist fascist who only wished he had killed more people.
Exactly. I mean, some of the leading politicians and media figures and intellectuals, particularly over the last 2 years, if not the last 10 years, have been asserting this idea that anti-racism, that critical race theory, that Latinx immigrants, that so-called black criminals, that Muslim terrorists, that people of color are harming or seeking to replace or even engage in a genocide against white people. That's the great replacement theory. That is a dominant talking point, particularly among members of the Republican Party. And so this is certainly not a fringe theory. It was a fringe theory on many levels a decade ago, but it's certainly not now.
So respond to what took place this weekend, how it's covered, the issue of it being a domestic terror attack, not a lone gunman, you know, who is suffering from mental illness. Last year, his school was so concerned about what he was saying, they called in the New York State Police, who had him taken for a mental evaluation, yet he could still lawfully buy in his hometown the weapon used in this attack.
For years now, law enforcement officials and FBI have been talking about and have been acknowledging, whether you're talking about the head of the Justice Department or the head of the FBI or even local officials, have been referring to white supremacist domestic terror as the leading terrorist threat of our time. And it's indisputable. And we also know that the people who are most likely to carry out these acts of domestic terror are younger white males. And so the fact that people, that this nation still does not recognize that we have a serious problem on our hands, and these younger white males are engaging in all sorts of acts of terror against Jewish Americans, against Black Americans, against Asian Americans, against women, against people from the LGBTQ plus community, and that, you know, I mean, that to me is part of the sort of horror, that to me is part of the toll that I think is weighing on people, because even after all of these mass murders and shootings over the last few days, people still don't feel as if this nation is seeking to protect them, is seeking to keep them safe.
That was Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Interviewing Ibram X. Kendi and on his take on what's going on. I was going to do a clip on the Republican Party and how they're supporting the Great Replacement Theory, but I think we're running out of time. And, you know, just to note that some of the Republican candidates and folks, Republican politicians, have been supporting and promoting this Great Replacement Theory in their elections going on right now. Of course, most prominently is Ohio Republican Senate nominee J.D. Vance, and also best-selling author of what is his book? I can't remember. He's warning of an immigrant invasion. He told Fox News that Democrats have decided they can't win re-election in 2022 unless they have bring a large number of new voters to replace the voters that are already here. And then others have said similar things. As mentioned, you know, one in three Americans, not Republicans, believe that an effort is underway to replace U.S.-born Americans with immigrants for electoral gain. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has called replacement theory that the Democrat grand plan. Republicans don't like to call the Democratic Party Democratic. It's their little dig to call it Democrat. Yeah, that's dumb. And then while touring the U.S.-Mexico border last month, former Missouri Governor Eric Greitens said that immigrants crossing over illegally were, quote, flooding into all of the 50 states, and that this was part of Biden's grand plan to assault on the entire idea of America. He's wiping out the distinction between citizens and non-citizens, and he's doing it on purpose. Greitens' Republican rival, Schmidt, claimed that tens of millions of Americans were crossing into the border because of Biden's policies, and that Democrats are intentionally encouraging immigration for their own benefit. So this is part of the present election cycle, what a lot of Republicans are running on in red states. And I imagine if we probably find that here as well. What a lot of the reporting also should include is the issue of the racist history of citizenship in this country as well. And, you know, there was systemic racism is rooted in immigration laws. The first comprehensive federal immigration law was forged by virulent racism against Chinese immigrants. The Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 prohibited the immigration of most Chinese people to the United States. From 1792 to 1952, being white was a prerequisite for the naturalization of immigrants. In 1924, Congress passed a discriminatory national origins quota system, which remained in place until 1965, favoring immigration from Northern Europe and greatly restricting migration of people of color to the United States. In 1954, the U.S. government removed hundreds of thousands of persons of Mexican ancestry from the country in an initiative officially known as Operation, and this is offensive, but wet back. And of course, as you all remember, Donald Trump kicked off his 2016 presidential campaign by offensively and disgustingly referring to Mexican immigrants as criminals and rapists. The Mexican Supreme Court has held that Mexican appearance may be considered by Border Patrol officers in making immigration stops, a move that has contributed to racial profiling and ordinary immigration enforcement. So this is, And, you know, being terms like alien and all this stuff, it legitimizes harsh treatment of people. Those deemed as aliens are subject to discrimination that never could be lawful with respect to U.S. citizens. So I'd like to actually, everyone's been pretty silent, and I respect that. This is a tough topic. And, and of course, Oregon has a racist history, as we all recall. Oregon actually began, as a whites-only state, right? They had through a series of black exclusionary laws that were designed to discourage black Americans from living here, you know. And, white Oregon has often been described as a racist white utopia, right? And the idea being that, I'm actually quoting from Walida Imarisha, a black studies educator here in Oregon, that the idea was that white folks would come here and build the perfect white society, right? And even while it was a territory in 1844, Oregon passed its first black exclusionary law, it did ban slavery, but also prohibited black people from living in Oregon territory for more than 3 years. If a black person broke this law, the consequence was 39 lashes every 6 months until they left. It's horrific. And the territory passed another black exclusion law 5 years later. In 1849, this one banned black people who were not already in the area from entering or residing in the territory. And then the final exclusion measure was actually put into the Oregon Constitution as a clause when the territory became a state 10 years later in 1859. This clause went further than the territory's second law by also prohibiting black people from owning property or making contracts. So we have a caller, Greg.
Hi there.
Hi, Greg.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I wanted to apologize for calling in there a couple months ago talking about the war. I didn't mean to, be an overbearing male, but I was really just overwrought with the success of the war propaganda when they, made everybody believe that, again, your racism stuff, that all the blonde people are worthy victims and blah, blah, blah. But, you're talking about your race today, and just want to kind of, this history of it in this country is long and incredibly bloody. But what you're calling white supremacy is actually race theory. And if we could possibly, look into, what race theory is and it's where we get this language from, and possibly use like the language the rest of the world uses, ethnic groups.
Okay, well, I will look into that into another show. Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.
Hey.
And thanks for calling in again and apologizing. I appreciate that. So we're almost at the end of the show, and so I actually, this has been a really tough topic to address, and the history is something that we all, as those who hold American citizenship, must contend with, right? And certainly the promulgation of noxious ideas via Fox News, the internet, and to see an 18-year-old man born in the 21st century being, becoming a mass murderer and taking the lives of innocent people and purposely seeking to create terror in the black community so that black people wouldn't feel safe is just, it's just horrific, absolutely horrific. And so I'd actually like to end the show with another clip from Takeaway and Reverend Jackie Lewis and Melissa Harris Perry, which we began the show with. They're discussing the American dream of equality and a future unbound by its racist beginnings. So we'll listen to that clip now.
If you think God is waiting around, gonna snap some magic stuff and it's gonna happen, hell no. It's you and me right now. We better get in this game. If you don't think we have work to do, you are sadly mistaken. I'm screaming at them, let's go, you know, trying to connect the dots between this fascist uprising against women's bodies, trans bodies, and the ongoing permanent pernicious racism, and anti-Black especially. We got to do something together. And they were so fired up. They were crying. They were shaking their fists. They were telling, you know, tell us what to do. And not to talk too long about that, but we are doing things already, love. We throw a conference every year to help people do anti-racist work. We have a reparations task force now looking at Indigenous and Black reparations. And we cry and we cry and we're mad as hell. And those are all the real feelings we should have when some white boy gets in a car and drives to hunt some Black people. We should be pissed off. And we are.
I was in New Orleans recently and went to Jazz Fest, and I was looking around and saying, okay, I got to have the exit. Can I grab the 8-year-old, you know, fast enough? Is my 20-year-old paying enough attention? I just started doing the exit route. And then Buffalo, and I was like, oh, so now I have to do that at the grocery store.
We are at epidemic status on this gun shooting thing, and that this country can't understand that the Second Amendment right to bear arms has got some old colonial crap built in about white people hunting Black people. It should not shock us that if we make it easy to get guns, white people are gonna hunt Black people. And somebody's gonna say, it's not just about Black people. Yes, but it is about guns, and it is about a culture of violence, and it is about hatred, and it is about the signs we see in white men who are angry, and it is about access to guns. So Melissa, let's not let people simplify this. Yes, we need anti-racist training in schools. Yes, we need to have signs that we see in our children, the warnings. We are so stupidly blind to this issue, and we gotta connect these dots, get the guns off the street, pay attention to the signs, and then unstoke the hatred, Melissa. We have got to stop acting like we can't do something about it.
Maybe this is as good as America gets. Where do you find the hope?